Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. Radio service of the Radio Corporation of America, the magic key turns, and members of the family of RCA all join in presenting an hour of entertainment featuring the distinguished violinist Ephraim Zimbalist, a cast of celebrated players including Ina Clare, Brian Ahern, Osgood Perkins, Charles Coburn, and A.G. Andrews in a scene from A School for Scandal, John Gough and his London singers, a unique ensemble of male voices, Jack Jackson and his Victor Recording Orchestra playing from London, England, and Frank Black conducting the NBC Symphony, opening the program with a moving overture to The Secret of Suzanne by Wolf Ferrari. Five jolly tars from across the sea. Five jolly tars who are at the same time fine artists, schooled in the best musical tradition. Perhaps the unusual quality of that combination helps explain the success attained by John Gough and his London singers, now on their fifth concert tour of the United States and Canada. Famed both here and abroad, they occupy a very special place in the concert field. On the one hand, their artistry has won acclaim from the most seasoned music critics. But they've also been able, by virtue of sheer lusty good humor, to draw applause from those who ordinarily shun concerts. The Magic Key of RCA turns to John Gough and his London singers, who have chosen for their first selection this afternoon a quaintly lugubrious old English song, Down Among the Dead Men.
Here's a health to the king and a lasting peace, to faction an end, to wealth increase. Come, let's drink it while we have breath, for there's no drinking after death.
And he that will this health deny, down among the dead men, down among the dead men, down, 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 down among the dead men, let him lie.
Let charming beauty's health go round, in whom celestial joys are found, and may confusion still pursue the senseless woman hating crew.
And he who woman's health denies, down among the dead men, down among the dead men, down, 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 down among the dead men, let him lie.
In jovial Bacchus' joys I'll roll, deny no pleasure to my soul. Let Bacchus' health round briskly move, for Bacchus is a friend to love.
And he that will this health deny, down among the dead men, down among the dead men, down, 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 down among the dead men. Let him lie.
And now another song from the picturesque England of a past age. John Goss and his London singers render Kaleno Kusturene.
When as I view
appropriately, John Goss and his London singers have chosen for their final selection on this afternoon's program one of those hearty sea shanties which are their specialty. 10,000 Miles Away.
My true love, she was beautiful. My true love, she was young. Her eyes were like the diamonds, bright and silvery was her tongue. And silvery was her tongue, my boy, so now she's far away. She's taken a trip on a government ship 10,000 miles away. And blow, you in, say ho, the rolling I will go. I'll stay no more on it,
no more on it, the morning day.
I'm on the morning rain, morning cross the raging main. I'm taking a trip on a government ship 10,000 miles away. Oh, dark and dismal was the day when last I seen my Meg. She'd a government band around each hand and another one round her leg. And another one round her leg, my boys, as the big ship left the bay. As you said, she remember me 10,000 miles away. Then slowly wind say ho, slowly I will go. I'll stay no more on the I'm off the morning train, don't cross the lake in vain. I'm taking a trip on the government 10,000 miles away. Sun may shine through a London fog, or the river run quite clear. The ocean's brine be turned to wine, or I forget my beer. Or I forget my beer, my boys, or the landlord's quarter day. Before I forget my own sweetheart 10,000 miles away, then
go, you in say ho,
the roving I will go. I'll stay no more, I'll stay no more. I'm off the morning train, so cross the lake in vain. I'm taking a trip on the government 10,000 miles away.
Of few people can it be truly said that they are world famous. But the great violinist Ephraim Zimbalist is one of those few. On his last world tour, he traveled more than 50,000 miles, playing in Australia, New Zealand, India, China, Japan, and Hawaii, as well as throughout Europe. Mr. Zimbalist, whose home is in New York City, was born in Russia. There, as a boy, he displayed such extraordinary talent that, when only 9 years old, he became first violinist in a grand opera orchestra. When still a youth, he graduated with special honors from the Imperial Conservatory in Petrograd, where he studied under the great teacher, Leopold Auer. Since, his career has been an imposing series of successes, and yet he remains the same unassuming, extremely modest artist that he was when he made his debut. The magic key of RCA turns to the distinguished Victor recording violinist, Ephraim Zimbalist, playing first the melodious romance in G by Beethoven. For an encore, Efren Zimbalist brings his artistry to Brahms' Hungarian Dance No. 21 in E minor and the familiar transcription for violin by Joachim. Letters received by business corporations are often very interesting, for they give concrete illustration of the way people throughout the country are reacting. To the RCA Victor offices in Camden, New Jersey, last week came this interesting communication from a lady in Butte, Montana.
I want to thank you for my new Easter outfit. Does that statement surprise you? Well, let me explain what I mean. For several months, I've been saving up to buy an RCA Victor Magic Brain radio. I had my heart set on one of these models because a friend of mine has one, and it gives her such marvelous reception. So, to make a long story short, there was I saving money and getting very close to the amount needed when I happened to pass by my RCA Victor dealer's window. To my great surprise and joy, I saw that with your new models, I could now get an RCA Victor radio with Magic Brain, Magic Eye, RCA metal tubes and everything for almost $30 less than I thought. I actually had saved up more money already than I now needed to buy the set. And so, thank you again, Mr. RCA Victor, for my new Easter outfit and my grand new radio, too.
Well, that letter certainly makes dramatically plain the saving now possible to people everywhere. If you, too, have been wanting an RCA Victor radio, be sure to visit your RCA Victor dealer tomorrow. Ask to see the two new models, the C819 and C820. Both are full-size radio consoles with the Magic Brain, Magic Eye, RCA metal tubes, and a 12-inch dynamic speaker, priced as low as $89.95 at the factory. Think of it, a saving to you of almost $30 from what you would previously have paid for an RCA Victor incorporating these features. And if you desire it, easy payments can be arranged. Thank you.
The selection just concluded by Frank Black and the NBC Symphony was The Humoresque by Sergei Rachmaninoff, originally composed for piano and transcribed for orchestra by Mr. Black. Magic Key, unlocking a world of entertainment, presented for your interest and pleasure by members of the family of RCA, co-workers in the creation of a universal radio service. Almost 200 years old, Richard Brinsley Sheridan's immortal comedy, The School for Scandal, remains one of the most brilliant pieces of dramatic writing in the English language. This afternoon, through the courtesy of the Actors Fund, we present the famous screen scene from the Sheridan classic, with an all-star cast, which includes some of the most prominent names in the American theater. In the part of Lady Teazle, we are to hear glamorous Ina Clare, currently starring in the Theatre Guild presentation, End of Summer. From the same production comes Mr. Osgood Perkins in the role of Joseph Surfers. The part of Charles Surfers will be taken by the popular young stage and screen star, Brian Ahern, whose present engagement is that of leading man to Catherine Cornell in her production of St. Joan. Completing the cast are the distinguished American actors Charles Coburn as Sir Peter Teazle and the venerable and beloved A.G. Andrews as Joseph Surfers. The Magic Key of RCA turns first to Mr. Osgood Perkins, who will set the stage for his fellow players.
As those of you who remember your School for Scandal need not be reminded, the beautiful young Lady Teazle is married to Sir Peter Teazle, who is many, many years her senior. Sir Peter's old friend, Sir Oliver, has two nephews, Joseph and Charles Surfers. Joseph has a reputation of being a very honorable young man, while his brother Charles, especially in Sir Peter's opinion, is very wild and unprincipled. Our scene is in the library of Joseph Surfers' townhouse. He is waiting for Lady Teazle, whom he has persuaded to visit him, on the pretense of giving her advice on how to cope with Sir Peter's jealousy. Joseph addresses his servant. No letter from Lady Teazle?
No, sir.
I'm surprised she has not sent. If she is prevented from coming, Sir Peter certainly does not suspect me.
Sir, I believe that must be Lady Teazle.
Hold, see whether it is or not.
Tis her ladyship, sir.
Say, draw that screen. Draw that screen before the window. My opposite neighbor is a lady of curious temper. Ah, that'll do.
Lady Teazle, sir.
What? Gentlemen, in soliloquy now. Have you been very impatient? Oh, lad, don't pretend to look grave. I vow I couldn't come before.
Oh, madam, punctuality is a species of constancy very unfashionable in a lady of quality.
Upon my word, you ought to pity me. You know Sir Peter has grown so ill-natured to me of late, and so jealous of Charles, too. I'm sure I wish he would let Maria marry him, and then perhaps he would be convinced.
Then, my dear Lady Teazle would also be convinced how wrong her suspicions were of my having any design on the silly girl.
Well, I'm inclined to believe you. But isn't it provoking to have the most ill-natured thing said of one? And all without any foundation, too. That's what vexes me.
Aye, madam, to be sure, that is the provoking circumstance, without foundation. For when a scandalous tale is believed against one, there certainly is no comfort like the consciousness of having deserved it.
And then, too, Sir Peter, to have him so peevish, so suspicious, when I know the integrity of my own heart, indeed, it is monstrous.
But, my dear Lady Teazle, tis your own fault if you suffer it. When a husband entertains a groundless suspicion of his wife, she owes it to the honor of her sex to endeavor to outwit him.
Indeed. So that if he suspects me without cause, it follows that the best way of curing his jealousy is to give him reason for it.
Undoubtedly. For your husband should never be deceived in you. And in that case, it becomes you to be frail in compliment to his discernment.
To be sure, what you say is very reasonable. And when the consciousness of my innocence...
Ah, my dear madam, there is the great mistake. Tis this very conscious innocence that is of the greatest prejudice to you. What makes you impatient of Sir Peter's temper and outrageous at his suspicions? Why, the consciousness of your own innocence.
It is very true.
Now, my dear Lady Teazle, if you would but once make a trifling faux pas, you can't conceive how cautious you would grow and how ready to humor and agree with your husband.
Do you think so?
Oh, I'm sure on it.
So, then I perceive your prescription is that I must sin in my own defense and part with my virtue to preserve my reputation.
Exactly so, upon my credit, ma'am.
Well, certainly this is the oddest doctrine and the newest receipt for avoiding calumny.
An infallible one, believe me. Prudence, like experience, must be paid for.
Why, if my understanding were once convinced...
Oh, certainly, madam, your understanding should be convinced. Yes, yes, heaven forbid that I should persuade you to do anything you thought wrong. No, no, I have too much honor to desire it.
Don't you think we may as well leave honor out of the argument?
The ill effects of your country education, I see, still remain with you.
I doubt they do indeed. And I will fairly own to you that if I could be persuaded to do wrong, it would be by Sir Peter's ill usage sooner than your honorable logic, after all.
Then, by this hand which he is unworthy of...
I beg your pardon, sir.
Death, you blockhead, what do you want?
I thought you'd not choose Sir Peter to come up without announcing him.
Sir Peter, the devil.
Sir Peter! Oh, lad, I'm ruined. I'm ruined.
Did not I let him in?
Oh, I'm quite undone. What will become of me? Now, Mr. Logic. Oh, mercy, sir, he's on the stair. I'll get behind the screen here. And if ever I'm so imprudent again...
Quick, quick, give me that book.
I, ever improving himself. Mr. Surtees. Mr. Surtees.
Oh, my dear Sir Peter, I beg your pardon. I've been doting over a stupid book.
Well, I'm much obliged to you for this call. You haven't been here, I believe, since I fitted up this room.
It is very neat indeed, indeed. Well, well, that's proper. And you can make even your screen a source of knowledge, hung, I perceive, with maps.
Oh, yes, yes, I find great use in that screen.
I dare say you must, especially when you want to find something in a hurry.
I ought to hide anything in a hurry, either.
Well, now we are alone. There is a subject of the greatest moment of my peace. In short, good friend, Lady Teazle's conduct of late has made me very, very unhappy.
Indeed, I'm very sorry to hear it.
Yes, 'tis evident she has not the least regard for me. But what's worse, I have pretty good authority to suppose that she has formed an attachment to another.
Oh, indeed, you astonish me.
Yes, and between ourselves, I think I have discovered the person.
How? You alarm me exceedingly.
But have you no guess who I mean?
I haven't the most distant idea.
Well, what say you to Charles?
My brother? Impossible. Yet I can't but think Lady Teazle herself has too much principle.
Aye, but what is principle against the flattery of a handsome, lively young fellow?
That's very true.
And then you know the difference of our ages makes it very improbable that she should have any great affection for thee. But then that Charles should be the person to attempt such wrong hurts me more nearly.
Oh, it is not to be credited. However, if it should be proved on him, he is no longer a brother of mine.
What a difference there is between you. What noble sentiments.
Yet I cannot suspect Lady Teazle's honor.
I'm sure I wish to think well of her and to remove all ground of quarrel between us. She has lately reproached me more than once for having made no settlement on her. And in our last quarrel, she almost hinted that she should not break her heart if I were dead. Here, my friend, here are the drafts of two deeds which I have wished to have your opinion on. By one, she will enjoy £800 a year independent while I live. And by the other, the bulk of my fortune after my death.
Oh, this conduct, Sir Peter, is indeed truly generous.
Yes, I am determined she shall have no cause to complain. Though I wouldn't have her acquainted with the latter instance of my affection yet a while.
Nor I, if I could help it.
Beg pardon, sir.
Well, sir.
Your brother is below, sir. He says he knows you are within, sir.
Death, you blockhead, I am not within. I'm out for the day.
Say. Wait. A thought has struck me. You shall be at home.
Well, let him up.
Now, my good friend, I entreat you. Before Charles comes, let me conceal myself somewhere. Then do you tax him on the point we have been talking. and his answer may satisfy me completely.
Oh, fine, Sir Peter.
Come, come, come. You shall not refuse me. Here, behind this screen.
Hey, what the devil?
There seems to be one listener here already.
I swear I saw a petticoat.
This is ridiculous enough, I tell you, Sir Peter. Though I hold a man of intrigue to be a most despicable character, yet, you know, it does not follow that one is to be an absolute Joseph, either. Harky, it is a little French milliner.
Oh.
A silly rogue that plagues me, and having some character to lose on your coming, sir, she ran behind the screen.
Oh. Ah, Joseph. Did I ever think that of you? But egad, she's overheard all I've been saying about my wife.
Oh, it will go no further. You may depend upon it she doesn't speak a word of English.
No. Then, Faith, let her hear it out. Here's a closet will do as well.
Well, go in there.
Oh, sly rogue.
Oh, a narrow escape indeed. And a curious situation I'm in to part man and wife in this manner.
Couldn't I steal off?
Keep close, my angel.
Joseph, are you sure the little French milliner won't blab?
In, my dear Sir Peter.
Brother, what's been the matter? Your fellow wouldn't let me up at first. And what has made Sir Peter steal off? I thought he'd been with you.
He was, brother, but hearing you were coming, he did not choose to stay.
What? Was the old gentleman afraid I wanted to borrow money of him?
No, sir. But I'm sorry to find, Charles, that you have lately given that worthy man grounds for great uneasiness.
Yes, they tell me I do that to a great many worthy men. But how so, pray?
To be plain with you, brother, he thinks you are endeavoring to gain Lady Teasel's affections from him.
Who? I? Oh, lad, not a punny word. So the old fellow has found out he's got a young wife, has he?
This is no subject to jest on, brother.
Seriously, I never had the least idea of what you charged me with, upon me honor. To be sure, I once thought the lady seemed to have taken a fancy to me, but upon my soul, I never gave her the least encouragement. Besides, you know my attachment to Mariah.
But sure, brother, even if Lady Teasel had betrayed the fondest partiality...
Why, looky, Joseph, I hope I shall never deliberately do a dishonorable action. But if a pretty woman were purposely to throw herself in my way...
Yes.
And that pretty woman married to a man old enough to be her father...
Well,
I believe I should be obliged to...
What?
To borrow a little of your morality, that's all.
Oh.
But, brother, do you know, now you surprise me exceedingly by naming me with Lady Teasel. For faith, I always understood you were her favorite.
Oh, for shame, Charles. This retort is foolish.
Nay, I swear. I've seen you exchange such significant glances.
Nay, sir. This is no jest.
Egad, I'm serious. Don't you remember one day when I called you?
Pretty Charles.
And found you together?
Shh. I beg your pardon, but Sir Peter has heard all we've been saying.
Oh, Sir Peter? Where is he?
Softly there. In that closet.
Oh, for heaven, I'll have him out. Sir Peter, come forth.
No.
I say, Sir Peter, come into court. What? My old guardian? What? Turn inquisitor and take evidence in cog? Oh, fie. Oh, fie.
Well, give me your hand, Charles. Give me your hand. I believe I've suspected you wrongfully. But you mustn't be angry with Joseph. It was my plan.
Indeed.
But I acquit you. I promise you I don't think near so ill of you as I did. What I have just heard has given me great satisfaction.
Egad, it was lucky you didn't hear any more. Wasn't it, Joseph?
Beg pardon, sir. May I speak to you privately, sir?
What is it?
Lady Sneerwell is below and says she will come up.
Lady Sneerwell, gad's life, she must not come here. Gentlemen... I beg your pardon, I must wait on you downstairs. Here is a person come on particular business.
Ah, you can see him in another room. Sir Peter and I haven't met for a long time, and I have something to say to him.
I'll return directly. Sir Peter, not a word of the little French milliner.
Aye, not for the world. Ah, Charles, if you associated more with your brother, one might indeed have hope for your reformation. There is a man of sentiment. Aye, there's nothing in the world so noble as a man of sentiment.
Sure, he's too moral by heart.
No. Come, you wrong him.
Oh.
No, Joseph is of no rake, but he is no such saint either in that respect. Harky, have you a mind to have a good laugh at Joseph?
I should like it of all things.
Well, any faith we will. He had a gal here with him when I called.
What?
Joseph?
Yes?
You jest.
Oh, no, hush, 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 hush. A little French milliner. And the best of the jest is, she's in the room now.
Devil she is.
Behind that screen.
Behind that screen. Let's unveil.
No. She's here. You shan't see.
Oh, egad. We'll have a peep at the little milliner.
No, not for the world.
I'll stand by you.
Lady Teazle, by all that's wonderful.
Lady Teazle, by all that's horrible.
Lady Teazle, by all that's damnable.
Sir Peter, this is one of the smartest French milliners I ever saw. And she doesn't speak a word of English. Egad, you seem all to have been diverting yourselves here at hide and seek. And I don't see who's out of the secret. Shall I beg your ladyship to inform me? Not a word? Brother, will you be pleased to explain this matter? What? Is morality dumb, too? Sir Peter, though I found you in the dark, perhaps you are not so now. All mute? Well, though I can make nothing of the affair, I suppose you perfectly understand one another. So I'll leave you to yourselves. Brother, I'm sorry to find that you have given that worthy man grounds for so much uneasiness. Sir Peter, there is nothing in the world so noble as a man of sentiment.
Sir Peter, yes, notwithstanding, I confess that appearances are against me. If you will afford me your patience, I make no doubt but I shall explain everything to your satisfaction.
If you please, sir.
The first is that Lady Teazle, knowing my pretensions toward your ward, Maria, called here in order that I might explain these pretensions, but on your coming, being apprehensive of your jealousy, she withdrew, and this, you may depend upon it, is the whole truth of the matter.
A very clear account, upon my word. And I dare swear the lady will vouch for every article in it.
Oh, not one word of it, Sir Peter.
How? Don't you think it worthwhile to agree in the lie?
There is not one syllable of truth in what that gentleman has told you.
I believe you upon my soul, ma'am. Death, ma'am, will you betray me?
Good Mr. Hypocrite, by your leave, I'll speak for myself.
Aye, let her alone, sir. You'll find she'll make out a better story than you without prompting.
Hear me, Sir Peter. I came hither on no matter relating to your ward, and even ignorant of the gentleman's pretensions to her. But I came, seduced by his insidious arguments, at least to listen to his pretended passion, if not to sacrifice your honor to his baseness.
Now I believe the truth is coming indeed.
The woman's mad.
No, sir. She has recovered her senses, and by your art, and your art have furnished her with the means. Sir Peter, I do not expect you to credit me, but the tenderness you expressed for me, when I'm sure you could not think I was witness to it, has so penetrated to my heart that had I left the place without the shame of this discovery, my future life would have spoken the sincerity of my gratitude. As for that smooth-tongued hypocrite, I behold him now in a light so truly despicable that I shall never again respect myself for having listened to him.
Notwithstanding all this, Sir Peter, heaven knows
that you are a villain, sir. So I take my leave and leave you with your conscience.
But you are too rash, Sir Peter. You shall hear me. The man who shuts out conviction by refusing to consider
Damn your sentiments, sir.
Their fame preceded them. Of three great English dance orchestra leaders, this is literally true. First, Ray Noble, whose music was familiar to many thousands of Americans through his fine Victor Records long before he ever glimpsed the Statue of Liberty. Then, Jack Hilton, known to us through the same medium before his actual arrival here. Today, a third outstanding English Victor Recording band leader makes his first appearance on an American radio program.
Dance fans across the Atlantic who nightly float have flocked to the fashionable Dorchester Hotel to enjoy the smart rhythms of Jack Jackson and his music, consider him an eminently worthy member of the popular triumvirate. To London, England, the magic key of RCA turns now, bringing you Jack Jackson and his Victor Recording Orchestra.
Thank you. A turn of the magic key takes you back across the Atlantic from London to New York.
We are back in Radio City, headquarters of the family of RCA. Yesterday afternoon, paid admissions of tour visitors to these Radio City studios of the National Broadcasting Company passed the million mark. Such tremendous evidence of public interest is not in the least surprising. For the universal service of radio, as given practical expression by the Radio Corporation of America, touches each of us intimately every day of our lives. For businessmen, the communications service of RCA offers the fastest and most direct means of contact with 47 different foreign countries and between a dozen cities of the United States. And any Western Union office will accept your radiogram marked via RCA. To the millions of radio listeners, through the National Broadcasting Company, the broadcasting service of RCA offers a schedule of interesting programs so varied as to suit every taste. If you want to hear them at their best, RCA Victor Magic Brain, Magic Eye, Metal Tube radios will bring them to you perfectly reproduced. The sets for these are created by the same engineers who designed the broadcasting stations of the National Broadcasting Company. In ship-to-ship and ship-to-shore communication, with the soundtracks of talking pictures and recorded music for your home, members of the family of RCA are constantly yours to command, helping you to transact business, adding to your pleasure. So that it is no empty phrase, but a plain statement of fact when we speak of the Universal Radio Service of the Radio Corporation of America. Your Universal Radio Service, yours and your family's.
Selection just played by Frank Black and the NBC Symphony Orchestra was the stirring Slavonic Dance No. 2 by the famous Czech composer Anton Dvořák. members of the family of RCA cordially invite you to be with us next Sunday when the Magic Key will turn again, bringing you a program of unusual interest, featuring stops in Paris, Berlin, Geneva, Madrid, Bangkok, Siam, Tokyo, Manila, Honolulu, Buenos Aires, Hollywood, and New York City. Ben Grauer
and Milton Cross speaking for one member of the family of RCA, the National Broadcasting Company.